Flow against her skin as the water began to seep through the cracks. And if the water level rose high enough in there to reach the generator before she was finished... "Come on, Mara. Come on," he muttered under his breath. "It's good enough. Let's go." He felt her negative thought. The wall wasn't yet shredded to her satisfaction. Luke pressed back his impatience and fear. The faces of Callista and Gariel hovering before him. Only a week ago, he told himself firmly that he could never permit himself to love Mara, that such a closeness and commitment from him would inevitably put her in danger. And now, he'd reneged on that determination. And sure enough, like all the others, his actions or inactions had put her in deadly danger. He felt a flicker in her emotions, mixing with the fear and dread rising chokingly from within him. And suddenly, her head breached the surface.
"Got it!"
she gasped. He had her moving before the second word was even out of her mouth, pulling her toward him with all the speed he could manage. He flipped her over the railing and lowered her flat on her stomach on the ledge, stretching himself protectively down on top of her as she landed.
"How soon?"
he asked, reaching out to the force to try to create a low-level shield that could provide at least a minimal barrier against the impending explosion.
"Could be any time,"
Mara answered, her voice muffled by the rock wall she was facing.
"And by the way, just for future reference, don't you ever not care for someone just because you're afraid they might get hurt in the process. Especially not me. You got that?"
Luke grimaced in embarrassment.
"You weren't supposed to hear that."
Behind him, he heard the sudden crack and surging of water as the transparasteel wall collapsed. And with a brilliant flash, he could see even with his eyes squeezed shut, the generator blew up. The sound of the blast itself was almost muffled, but the roar of the wave that slammed over them more than made up for it. The water surged and roiled all around them, effortlessly picking them up and slamming them back and forth between the wall, the ledge, and the railing. Luke held grimly on to Mara, wishing belatedly he'd thought to tie R2 down somehow. And then, as suddenly as it had struck, the swirling water fell away, leaving them bruised and drenched, but otherwise unharmed. Shaking the water out of his eyes, Luke pushed himself up on one arm and looked out into the chamber. Caught his breath. Only one of the room's glow panels had survived the explosion, but by its dim light, he could see that the water level was rapidly going down.
"Mara, look! It worked!"
"I'll be kisseled,"
she said, spitting out some water.
"Now what? We jump in and follow the flow?"
Luke leaned over the railing, trying to see the exit tunnel. If it wasn't still full to the ceiling... But it was.
"It's not quite that simple,"
he told Mara.
"The flow should carry us back into the caverns, all right. But there's still the matter of getting through the tunnel and underground room."
"Why don't we just wait until the level goes down far enough?"
"We can't," Luke said. "I don't know why."
"Jedi hunch,"
Mara said.
"Then we're back to hibernation trances. How fast can you put me in one?"
"Pretty fast," he told her. "Take a few deep breaths and tell me what phrase you want me to use to snap you out of it."
"A phrase? Right,"
she said, inhaling deeply, a strangely cautious mood touching her mind.
"Okay, see if you can handle this one."
She told him, and he smiled.
"Got it," he said, and stretched out with the force.
A minute later, she was fast asleep in his arms.
"You go first, R2, Luke told the droid, lifting him up with the force and easing him over the railing. "We'll be right behind you."
The droid warbled, and then he was in the water, his dome bobbing above the waves as he was swept toward the tunnel. Wrapping his arms protectively around Mara, Luke jumped in behind him. The current grabbed them, pushing them along behind the bobbing droid as Luke struggled to keep their heads above water. The wall and the top of the tunnel archway loomed ahead. And just before they reached it, Luke took a deep breath and pulled them both under the surface. The rest of the trip was a blur of dizzying speed, continual buffeting of the water, near collisions with smooth walls and rough stone, aching eyes and lungs. Through his half-trance, Luke was vaguely aware of where they left the tunnel and entered the underground room, was more sharply aware of where they slammed through the newly enlarged gap in the wall and the protective cortosis ore barrier as the turbulence threw them back and forth against the rock. The torrent dragged them, twisting and turning through the caverns and tunnels they'd so laboriously picked their way through days earlier with Child of Winds and the Kwamja. Dimly, through his slow asphyxiation, Luke decided it was just as well that they'd cut away so many of the stalactites and stalagmites that would have been in their way. Abruptly, he snapped awake, half submerged in water, his head and chest resting precariously on a slimy boulder, R2's frantic twittering in his ears. "Okay, right," he managed, shaking his head to clear it, and suddenly stiffened. Mara was gone. He shook his head again, digging out his glow rod with numb, half-frozen fingers as he scrabbled around looking for footing. He found it immediately. The water he was in turned out to be only waist high. He fumbled the glow rod out at last and flicked it on. He was standing in a pool just off the edge of the last of the underground rivers he and Mara had passed during their trip through the caverns. 5 meters to his left, the torrent that had brought them here had vanished, leaving only the river rippling its sedate way along. And 2 meters to his right, bobbing gently in the pool as she floated beside the craggy rock, was Mara. Her eyes closed, her arms and legs limp, as if in death. The precise image he'd seen of her in that Jedi vision on Tearfon. And then he was at her side, raising her head out of the water, gazing at her face in sudden fear. If the trance hadn't kept her alive, if she'd struck something hard enough to kill her after he'd lost his grip on her. Behind him, R2 whistled impatiently. "Right," Luke agreed, cutting off his sudden panic. All he had to do to bring her out of it was speak the key phrase she'd chosen. The phrase she'd wondered aloud if he could handle. Almost as if she was afraid he couldn't. He took a deep breath. "I love you, Mara." Her eyes blinked open, blinked again as she chased the water from them. "Hi," she said, breathing heavily as she grabbed his arm and maneuvered herself upright. "I see we made it." "Yes," Luke said, taking her in his arms and holding her tightly, his tension and fear evaporating into a mist of utter calm and relief. The vision had been passed, and Mara had survived it. And they were together again, forever.
"Yes," Mara murmured. "Forever."
They loosened their grips on each other, just slightly, and standing together in the cold water, their lips came together in a kiss. It seemed like a long time before Mara gently pulled away from the embrace.
"Not to put a damper on this," she said, "but we're both shivering, and we're still a long way from home. Where are we, anyway?"
"Back at our underground river," Luke told her, reluctantly bringing his mind back to practical matters.
"Ah."
She peered toward the stream.
"What happened to our personal flood?"
"It seems to have ended," Luke said. "Either we drained the lake completely..."
"Which is real unlikely."
"Right," Luke said. "Or else it's gotten stopped up again somehow."
"Probably more of the chamber wall collapsed," Mara said,
reaching up to push back some of the hair that had gotten plastered across her cheek.
"Or else it's jammed up with what's left of the cloning equipment."
Luke nodded, helping her push the rest of her hair back out of the way. "Good thing we didn't wait any longer to make our exit."
"Sure is," Mara agreed. "Handy things, those Jedi hunches. You'll have to teach me how to do those."
"We'll work on it," Luke promised, wading toward the edge of the pond. "I think the Kwamja said this river emptied out into a small waterfall."
Sounds good,
Mara said.
Let's go find it.
Another wave of skip-ray blast boats shot past, pelting the Tyrannic with laser fire. Behind them, two of the Ashori war cruisers had gotten inside the kill zone and were scattering a dazzling pattern of more powerful turbo laser blasts across the ridgeline.
Two more starboard turbo lasers knocked out,
the fire control officer called tensely.
Forward ridgeline has been breached. Crews are sealing it off.
Acknowledged,
Nalgal said, hearing his voice trembling with a frustrated and wholly impotent fury. It was unthinkable. Unthinkable that a fleet of three Imperial Star Destroyers should find themselves fighting for their survival against such a pitiful ragtag of aliens and alien lovers. But that was exactly what they were doing. There were just too many of them to keep track of. Too many of them to fight. And with all his pride in his ship and his crew and his empire, Nalgal was realist enough to know when the fight had become hopeless.
Signal to the Obliterator and Iron Hand,
he ordered between clenched teeth.
Pull back and withdraw. Repeat, pull back and withdraw.
Acknowledged, Captain,
the comm officer replied.
What heading, sir?
The helmsman called.
A short jump in any direction.
Nalgal glared out the viewport.
And after that, set course directly for Bastion. Grand Admiral Thrawn needs to hear about this.
And he would indeed hear about it, Nalgal promised himself silently. Yes, indeed. He would hear all about it. The waterfall exit was considerably less cozy than Luke had expected it to be, the hole possibly having been enlarged by the flood that had just forced its way through. There weren't any footholds right at the mouth, but in the dim starlight, Mara spotted a likely ledge about 5 meters to the left. Using the Force, Luke lifted first Mara, then R2 across the gap. Then, a bit more tentatively, Mara brought him across to join them.
Any idea what side of the fortress we're on?
She asked, looking around the darkened landscape.
Or how much longer we've got until dawn?
No to both questions, Luke said, stretching out with the Force. There was no danger nearby that he could detect. Probably the far side, and probably not more than a couple more hours.
We'd better use the time to get undercover,
she suggested, peering up at the cliff above them.
We don't want to be out in the open when Park sends out his search parties.
I just hope he doesn't find the ship we borrowed, Luke said. Aside from giving him back his quick access to Bastion, it would lose us our only way of getting out of here together.
Well, if he does, you and R2 will just have to take your X-Wing and go for help,
Mara said.
You mean you and R2 will go,
Luke said firmly.
I mean that, Mara. No argument this time.
Jedi! Skywalker!
Luke looked up. Fluttering to a landing on a boulder above them were a dozen dark shapes. And the tone and mind of one of them seemed very familiar.
Yes, he said. Is that you, Hunter of Winds?
Rawr! It is I,
the Quan Kuei confirmed.
My son, child of winds, informed all nearby nestings of your deeds this night. We have been watching for your return.
Thank you, Luke said. We very much appreciate your efforts. Can you show us to a place of shelter nearby? We need to hide from those in the high tower until we can make our way back to our ship.
Hunter of Winds ruffled his wings.
No need for shelter, Jedi Skywalker,
he said.
We will carry you to your flying machine, as my son and his companions did earlier this night.
Luke frowned. After Hunter of Wind's quick and cavalier dismissal of him and his mission when he and R2 first landed, such magnanimity seemed suspiciously out of character.
You're very kind, he said carefully. May I ask why you're willing to take such risks for us?
Hunter of Winds ruffled his wings.
I have spoken to the bargainer for this nesting of the Quamjar,
he said.
Eater of Fire Creepers has agreed to release you from your promise to help us against the Threateners, provided you leave our world at once.
Luke felt his face warming. In other words, our presence here has become a liability to you?
Child of Winds has said the Threateners will not harm us if we do not bother them.
Hunter of Winds said gruffly.
It is to that end that we wish you to leave.
Nothing like being appreciated, is there?
Mara muttered.
It's all right, Luke said, touching her hand and her mind soothingly,
reminding her that embarrassment, and even veiled insult aside, this was in fact the result she herself had said she wanted. Park and the Chiss would now be left alone, unharassed by the Quamjha and Quamque, and free to focus their full energies on their work in the unknown regions.
Fine,
she said, and Luke could feel her grudging acceptance.
But he's not Child of Winds anymore. After what he's been through, he deserves to have a name of his own.
Really?
Hunter of Winds said, giving her a long, thoughtful look.
And what name do you suggest for him?
The one he's earned,
she said softly.
Friend of Jedi.
Hunter of Winds ruffled his wings again.
I will consider it. But now, let us depart. The night grows old, and you will wish to be gone before the sunrise.
I look forward to it, Flynn was saying, as Card rounded the archway onto the Relentless's bridge.
Yes,
Pelion said.
So will I.
The Admiral turned as Card stepped up beside him.
You're late,
Pelion said mildly.
I was watching the turbolift, Card explained. I thought Flynn and his associates might try to bring a squad of stormtroopers in on their side of the dispute.
They might have at that,
Pelion said.
Thank you.
No problem,
Card assured him, looking around the bridge. The Major Tierce clone was lying unmoving on the deck. Shada was across with the other two Mistral. The con man Flynn was waiting with studied unconcern just back of the command walkway, and Moff Deesra was a little off to one side, standing as aloof and cold and dignified as a man facing his own destruction could manage.
Besides, it doesn't look like my presence was really needed.
Not for this part, no,
Pelion agreed.
Your friend Shada is quite impressive. I don't suppose she'd be interested in a job.
Well, she is looking for a higher cause to serve,
Card told him.
However, to be perfectly honest, I don't think the Empire is it.
Pelion nodded.
Perhaps we can change that.
Admiral Pelion, a voice called from the crew pits. I have General Bel Iblis for you now.
Thank you.
Pelion looked to Card.
Don't run off. I'll want to speak with you later.
Certainly.
The Admiral headed down the command walkway, passing Flynn without a second glance. Throwing one last look at Deesra, Card crossed to where Shada and the other young Mistral were helping the older woman to a sitting position.
How is she?
He asked.
Not as bad as we thought,
Shada said, probing gingerly into the scorched tunic.
She was able to twist almost out of the way of the shot.
Well-honed reflexes,
Card nodded.
Once a Mistral, always a Mistral, I suppose.
The older woman eyed him balefully.
You're very well informed, she growled.
About a great many things, Card agreed calmly. Among them, the fact that Shaeta seems to have earned your displeasure somehow.
And what? You think this makes up for it?
The woman snapped contemptuously. Doesn't it? Card countered.
If she hadn't stopped tears when she did, you two would have been the next to die after Pelion. You were the most immediate threats to him.
She snorted.
I'm a mistral, Talon Card. My life is gladly given in the service of my people.
Really?
Card looked at the younger woman.
Do you also consider your life not worth a little gratitude?
Leave Karoli out of this, the older woman bit out. She has nothing to say on the matter.
Ah, Card said. Soldiers with no voice or opinion. Remarkably similar to the philosophy of the Imperial Stormtroopers.
Karoli allowed Shaeta to escape once before,
the woman said, glowering at her.
She's fortunate she wasn't punished herself for that.
Oh, yes, Card murmured. How very lucky for her.
The woman's eyes flashed.
If you've quite finished...
I haven't,
Card said.
Clearly you don't consider Mistral lives worth anything. What about Mistral reputations?
Her eyes narrowed.
What do you mean?
Card waved toward Flim.
You're about to make an alliance with these people. You're about to be taken in by nothing more than slick talk, whipped air, and a dirt-level fringe conman. And don't bother denying it. A member of the Eleven doesn't travel off Emberline just for the exercise.
The woman's eyes drifted away from his gaze.
The issue was still under discussion, she muttered.
Glad to hear it, Card said. Because if even your reputation doesn't matter to you, consider what binding the Mistral to a vengeful man like Moff Disra would have meant. How long do you think it would have been before you became his private death commandos?
That would never have happened, Karoli put in emphatically. We would never sink that low. Not even under a treaty.
Shaeta stirred.
What was it you tried to stop me from doing on the Resonim complex roof?
She asked quietly.
That was different,
Karoli protested. Shaeta shook her head.
No. Condoning and cooperating with murder is no different from committing it yourself.
She's right, Card said.
And once you started down that road, it would have meant the end of the Mistral. You'd have burned your sky arches behind you, with every other potential client. And when Flim's soap bubble collapsed, as it inevitably would have, there would have been nothing left out there anymore for you. And with the end of the Mistral would have come a final end to Emberline.
He crossed his arms and waited. And after a few seconds, the older woman grimaced.
What is it you want?
I want the Mistral Hunter teams called off Shaeta, he said. Whatever her alleged crime against you, it's to be forgiven, and the death mark lifted.
The woman's mouth twisted.
You ask much.
We've given much, Card reminded her.
Is it a deal?
She hesitated, then nodded reluctantly.
Very well. But she will not be reinstated into the Mistral. Not now, not ever. And Emberline will forever be closed to her.
She turned burning eyes up at Shaeta.
From now on, she is a woman without a home.
Card looked at Shaeta. Her face was tight, her lips pressed tightly together. But she returned his look steadily and nodded.
Fine, he said. We'll just have to see about finding her a new home.
With you? The woman snorted. With a smuggler and seller of information? Tell me again how low a Mistral can sink.
There was no answer to that. But fortunately, Carr didn't have to come up with one. There was a sudden bustling at his side, and then he was gently but firmly shouldered away by the medical team as they gathered around the injured woman. He stepped back out of their way, shifting his attention to the security team that had arrived at the same time. With professional efficiency, they scanned Flim and Deesra for hidden weapons, put restraints on them both, and escorted them back to the aft bridge turbolift. Another group, following behind them, was carrying Tierce's body.
Cars?
He turned to see Pelion walking back along the command walkway toward him.
I have to go across to the Errant Venture and speak with General Belyblis,
the Admiral said as he reached him.
But before I go, I wanted to discuss the price for the Flim and Tierce information you brought me.
Card shrugged. For once in my life, Admiral, I'm not sure what to say, he admitted. The data card was a gift to me. It seems a bit dishonest to turn around and charge you for it.
Ah.
Pelion eyed him speculatively.
A gift from those aliens whose ship scared the stuffing out of my sensor officers at Bastion?
From an associate of theirs, Card said. I'm really not at liberty to discuss the details.
I understand, Pelion said. Still, your ethics apart, which I find laudable, incidentally, I'd like to find a way to thank you with something more concrete than just words.
I'll see what I can come up with. Card gestured toward the Star Destroyer visible out the viewport. In the meantime, may I ask what you're going over to discuss with General Belyblis? Pelion's eyes narrowed slightly, but then he shrugged.
It's still highly confidential, of course, he said. But knowing you, you'll probably know about it soon enough anyway. I'm proposing a peace treaty between the Empire and the New Republic. It's time for this long war to finally end.
Card shook his head. There are things that happen when I'm out of touch at the edges of known space, he said philosophically. For whatever it's worth, Admiral, I agree wholeheartedly with your goal. And I wish you luck.
Thank you, Pelion said. Feel free to leave whenever you wish, or allow your crew to take advantage of any of the Relentless's facilities if they'd like. And again, thank you.
He headed off toward the turbolift. Card watched him go, then looked back at Shaeda. The medical team had finished their preliminary work and were helping the injured woman onto a stretcher. Shaeda was watching them from a few paces away, an expression of private pain on her face, like someone watching the last member of her family leaving home. And then, unbidden, an idea drifted into Card's mind. Something larger than herself, she told Cardass. Something she could hold on to and serve and believe in. Something more honorable and noble than the life of a fringe smuggler. Something that would make a difference.
Admiral Pelion, he called, hurrying back to the aft bridge. Admiral?
Pelion had paused at the open door of the turbolift.
Yes?
Let me ride over with you to the Errant Venture, if I may,
Card said, stepping to his side.
I have a modest proposal I'd like to make to you.
Luke's final fear was that the Hand of Thrawn's weapons towers would spot them as they lifted their borrowed ship out of its hiding place, forcing their departure from the Nirwan surface to be yet another mad race against death. But the Chiss were apparently still dealing with the aftermath of the hangar destruction, with no attention left to turn outward. And so they lifted out into space without challenge. And with Mara's touch on the hyperdrive lever, the stars became star lines, faded into the mottling of hyperspace. And at long last, they were on their way home.
Next stop, Coruscant,
Luke said with a sigh, leaning back tiredly in the co-pilot seat.
Next stop, the nearest New Republic base, or one of Card's outposts, Mara corrected.
I don't know about you, but I want a shower, some clean clothes, and something besides ration bars to eat.
Point taken, Loop said. You always were the practical one, weren't you?
And you always were the idealistic one,
she said.
Must be why we work so well together.
Speaking of practical, remember back in the cloning chamber when R2 went all squeaky?
You mean just before the Sentinel droid showed up?
Right. We never did find out what was tying him in knots that way.
Well, let's find out now, Luke said, levering himself out of his seat and making his way back to the droid alcove where they'd plugged R2 into the ship's computer. Okay, R2. You heard the lady. What was it about the unknown region's data that got you all excited?
R2 warbled, his words appearing on the computer display.
He says it didn't have anything to do with the unknown regions, Luke reported, which he says he didn't get any more than a general overview of, by the way.
I didn't think he'd gotten very much,
Mara said regretfully.
He wasn't connected to the computer nearly long enough to download everything.
Well, we're sure not going to go back and get the rest now, Luke said, skimming down the scrolling words. But there was something he stumbled across in one of the other records.
Mara must have picked up his sudden shock.
What is it?
She asked sharply.
I don't believe it, he murmured, still reading. Mara, he found it.
He found it. Wonderful. Found what?
What else? Luke looked up at her.
Thrawn's copy of the Ka-Mas document.
Chapter 43.
15 days later, in the secondary command room of the Imperial Star Destroyer Chimera, the peace accords between the Empire and New Republic were signed.
I still say you should have been the one over there,
Han groused as he and Leia watched from the back of the room, while Pelion and Gavrissom performed the ceremony amid the crowd of assembled dignitaries.
You did way more on this than he did.
It's all right, Han,
Leia said, surreptitiously wiping a tear from the corner of her eye.
Peace.
After all the years, after all the sacrifice and destruction and death, finally, they had peace.
Yeah?
Han countered suspiciously.
Then how come you're crying?
She smiled at him.
Memories, she said. Just memories.
He found her hand, took it comfortingly.
Alderaan?
He asked quietly.
Alderaan, the Death Stars.
She squeezed his hand.
You?
Nice to know I'm in the top three anyway, he said, looking around the room. Speaking of old memories, where's Lando? I thought he was going to be here.
He changed his mind, Leia said. I guess Tendra wasn't very happy with him heading out to Bastion with you without at least telling her about it. He's taken her art shopping on Celanon to make it up to her.
Han shook his head. Strong women, he said mock sadly. They'll get you every time.
Watch that,
Leia warned, digging her elbow into his side.
You've always liked strong women. Admit it.
Well, not always,
Han said.
Ow! Okay. I like strong women.
What's this about strong women?
Card's voice asked from Han's other side.
Just a friendly family discussion,
Han assured him.
Good to see you again, Card. How come you're not over there with the rest of the high-class people?
Probably the same reason you're not, Card said. I don't exactly fit in with that sort of group.
That'll change soon,
Leia assured him.
Particularly now that you're respectable and all. How in the world did you talk Gavrissom and Bell Iblis into this joint intelligence service idea?
The same way I talked Pelion into it, actually, Card said. I simply pointed out that the key to a stable and calm peace is both sides knowing the other isn't plotting some kind of move against them. Bastion doesn't trust your intelligence network, and Coruscant definitely doesn't trust theirs.
He shrugged.
Enter a neutral third party. Us, who straddle both regimes and are already equipped to gather and assemble information. We'll simply now be supplying it to your two governments instead of to private buyers.
It could work, I suppose,
Han agreed cautiously.
The Bureau of Ships and Services has been operating independently for years without going political, either under the Empire or the New Republic. You might be able to pull it off.
I like the fact that we'll be getting the same information about our own systems that you'll be giving Bastion, Leia said. It'll supplement the data the observers are sending us and help us keep track of what the various system and sector governments are up to. That should help us spot problems before they get too big to deal with.
Yeah, Han said darkly. Just because the Ka-Mas document Luke and Mara brought back slowed down a lot of the brush wars doesn't mean they won't start up again.
Still, I suspect that seeing how easily their old rivalries were manipulated by Deesra and Flim has made them more cautious, Leia pointed out. I know of at least 8 conflicts where the participants have now petitioned Coruscant for mediation.
It may also depend somewhat on how the trial goes, Card said. I was a bit surprised so many of the culprits are still alive.
Bothans tend to be long-lived, Leia said. I'm sure that group is regretting that fact.
Across the room, Leia could see Bell Iblis and Ghent talking with Pelion now. Ghent looking extremely uncomfortable at his inclusion into such, to his mind, exalted company. A little ways behind them, Chewbacca was riding patient herd on Jason, Jaina, and Anakin as the children chattered excitedly away to Barkkimp and the two other Nogri about their adventures on this latest visit to Kashyyyk.
Did Luke tell you where he found that copy of the document, by the way? Card asked. I couldn't get anything out of Mara.
No. He and Mara have both been very quiet about it, Leia said. Luke said they have some thinking to do before they give us any details. It most certainly has to do with that odd spaceship they came back in.
I imagine there's an interesting story behind it all, Card suggested.
Leia nodded.
I'm sure we'll hear it eventually.
Han cleared his throat.
Speaking of Luke, he said. And speaking of strong women, he added, throwing Leia a grin. How's your organization going to manage without Mara?
We'll have some problems, Card conceded. She was running a good deal of the organization, after all. But we'll adjust.
Besides, he's got someone new to take her place,
Leia couldn't resist adding.
Shada's officially joined him. Had you heard that?
Yeah, I did,
Han said, giving Card a highly speculative look.
You know, I asked you once what it would take to get you to join the New Republic. Remember? You asked what it had taken to get me to join up?
Yes, I remember,
Card cut him off, an uncharacteristic note of embarrassment coloring his voice.
Kindly bear in mind that I have not joined the New Republic, and my relationship with Shada is nothing like that.
Neither was mine,
Han said smugly, putting his arm around Leia.
That's okay. Give it time.
It's not going to happen,
Card insisted.
Yeah, Han said. I know.
On the ship's layout map, the room was called a forward visual triangulation site, for use in line-of-sight weapons targeting if any enemy managed to knock out the main sensor array. But for tonight, at least, it had become a private observation gallery. Mara leaned against the cool, transparent-steel viewport, gazing out at the stars, wondering at the right angle turn her life had just taken. You realize, of course, Luke commented, as he came up behind her with their drinks, that they're all probably wondering where we are.
Let them wonder,
Mara said, sniffing the air appreciatively over the mug he handed her. The courtiers of Palpatine's court had always been openly contemptuous of hot chocolate, considering it beneath the dignity of elites such as themselves. Card and his people, like the good smugglers they were, had turned up their noses at all non-alcoholic drinks in general. But the drink fit perfectly with Luke's farm boy past. It gave her a warm feeling, evoking a sense of comfort and stability and security. Simple necessities, which she'd missed so much throughout most of her life. She took a sip. And besides that, the stuff just plain tasted good.
"Has Leia talked to you about the wedding?" Luke asked, sipping from his own mug as he leaned against the viewport facing her.
"Not yet," Mara said, making a face. "I suppose she's going to want some big blowout High Alderaanian ceremony."
Luke grinned. "Wants, probably. Expects, no."
"Good," Mara said. "I'd rather have something quiet and private, and dignified. Mostly dignified, anyway," she amended. "With New Republic dignitaries on one side, and Card smugglers on the other. We'll probably need a weapons check at the door."
Luke chuckled.
"We'll figure something out."
She eyed him over the rim of her mug.
"Speaking of figuring things out, have you decided what we're going to do about the Academy?"
He turned his head to gaze out the viewport. "I can't just abandon the students I have there," he said. "That much I know. I was thinking maybe I could slowly turn it into, oh, call it a pre-Jedi school. A place where beginning students can get the basics, maybe learn something from older students, and do a little practicing among themselves. Once they've passed that stage, you and I and other instructors can complete their training, maybe in a more personal one-on-one arrangement, the way Ben and Master Yoda trained me." He looked back at her. "Assuming you want to be involved with the training at all, that is." She shrugged.
"I'm not completely comfortable with the idea," she admitted. "But I am a Jedi now. At least, I assume I am. And until we can swell the ranks of instructors, I suppose teaching is going to be a part of my job."
She considered.
"At least it will be once I've gotten a little more training of my own under my belt."
"Private training, of course?"
"I should hope so," she said. "Before I can do that, though, I'll need time to gracefully disengage from Card's organization. I've got responsibilities I have to transfer over to other people, and I can't just let them slide."
She smiled.
"Responsibility and commitment, you know."
There was a flicker in his emotions. "Yes," he murmured.
"Though even when I'm ready to start teaching, I don't think I'll want to stay on Yavin to do it,"
she continued, studying him closely.
"Maybe the two of us could travel around the New Republic with the more advanced students, teaching them as we go. That way we'd be available for emergency conflict mediation and conciliation, and all the other things Jedi are supposed to do, while at the same time giving the students a taste of real-life situations."
"That would be very useful," Luke said. "I know I could sure have used some of that myself."
"Good."
She regarded him thoughtfully.
"Now tell me what's bothering you."
"What do you mean?" he asked warily, his thoughts closing in on themselves.
"Oh, come on, Luke," she said gently. "I've been inside your head and your heart. You can't keep secrets from me anymore. Something hit you when I mentioned responsibility and commitment a minute ago. What was it?"
He sighed, and she could sense him give up. "I guess I still have some lingering doubts about why you'd want to marry me," he said hesitantly. "I mean, I know why I love you and want to marry you. It's just that it doesn't seem like you'll be gaining as much from this as I will." Mara gazed down at the dark liquid in her mug.
"I could point out that marriage isn't a game of profit and loss," she said. "But I suppose that would just be deflecting the question."
She took a deep breath.
"The fact is, Luke, that until that mental and emotional melding we had during the battle in Thrawn's cloning chamber, I didn't even know myself what it was I wanted. Sure, I had friends and associates,
but I'd cut myself off so completely from any real emotional attachments that I didn't even realize how much a part of life was missing.
She shook her head.
I mean, look, I cried when the Jade's fire crashed. A ship. A thing. And yet I cried over it. What did that say about my priorities?
It wasn't just a thing, though, Luke murmured.
It was your freedom. Sure, Mara said. But that's part of the point. It represented freedom, but it was freedom to escape from other people if I decided I wanted out.
She looked out at the stars.
In many ways, I'm still all closed up emotionally. You, on the other hand, have such an emotional openness, it sometimes drives me crazy. That's what I need to learn. And you're the one I want to learn it from.
She moved closer to him and took his hand.
But that's just profit and loss games again. The simple bottom line fact is that this is the right path for us. Like that Kwamja proverb Builder with Vines quoted at us in the caverns. The one about many vines woven together being stronger than the same number used separately. We complement each other perfectly, Luke. All the way down the line. In many ways, we're two halves of a single being.
I know that, he said. I guess I just wasn't sure you did.
I know just about everything you do now,
Mara reminded him.
Fawn was right. We do make a good team. And we can only get better at it. Give us a few more years, and enemies of the New Republic will be running for cover like crazy.
And those enemies will definitely be there, Luke said, sobering as he turned again to gaze out the viewport at the distant stars. That's our future, Mara. Out there in the unknown regions. Our hopes and dreams, promises and opportunities, dangers and enemies. And for the moment, we're the ones who hold that key. Mara nodded, stepping close to his side and putting her arm around him.
We'll have to decide what to do with that overview R2 downloaded. Maybe send probe ships out to take a look at some of the worlds Thrawn had listed, just to see what's there.
Sounds reasonable, Luke said. Either on our own or under New Republic auspices. And we also have to decide what to do about the Hand of Thrawn.
My vote is that we leave them out of it, Mara said. If they're not interested in talking to us, the last thing we want to do is try to force the issue.
What if Park decides to talk to Bastion instead? Luke asked. Mara shook her head.
I don't think he will. If he hasn't contacted them by now, it must mean he's picked up the news reports that the Thrawn sighting was a hoax and decided to go back to lying low.
He could also be plotting how to come after you for what you did to his hangar and ships, Luke warned.
I'm not worried about it, Mara said. The ships themselves he can undoubtedly replace, and he ought to be grateful I stopped him from giving the Hand of Thrawn to Deesra and Flim.
She shrugged.
Besides, Fel did tell me to take my best shot.
Luke smiled. I doubt that was exactly what he had in mind.
I'm not responsible for what Baron Fel has in mind,
Mara reminded him.
Seriously, I think if they do anything, it will be to try to recruit me again.
And, of course, wait for Thrawn to return. Mara thought about the dead clone floating in the flooded chamber.
That could take a while.
True. Luke said. Still, I suppose that even if they get tired of waiting and contact Bastion, we have a treaty with the Empire now. Maybe ultimately we'll all head out to develop those regions together. Mara nodded.
And to face whatever's out there. That could be interesting.
Luke nodded back, and for a few minutes they stood arm in arm, looking out at the stars. An almost vision floated before Mara's eyes.
A vision of the future. Their future.
And of what they would face together. Challenges. Children. Friends. Enemies. Allies. Dangers. Joys. Sorrows. All of it swirled into a sort of living mosaic, fading away into the distance. a vision like she'd never seen before. But then she'd never been a Jedi before. There were indeed going to be interesting challenges ahead. "But that's the future," Luke murmured, his breath warm on the side of her face. "This is the present." Mara pulled a little away from him.
"And as head of the Jedi Academy and brother of High Counselor Organa Solo, you should at least put in an appearance at the ceremony?"
she suggested. He gave her a wry look. "Yes, that's just about what I was going to say," he acknowledged. "I can see this is going to take some getting used to."
"There's still time for you to back out,"
she pointed out. He kissed her warmly. "Not a chance," he said. "I'll see you later." Setting down his mug, he headed for the door.
"Hang on a minute,"
Mara said, stepping away from the viewport and her tantalizingly brief vision of the future. As Luke had said, this was the present. The future would take care of itself.
"I'll come with you."
This is Mark Thompson. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, Vision of the Future by Timothy Zahn. Read for you by Mark Thompson. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Aaron Blank. Star Wars, Vision of the Future is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2013, all rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.